Hello, and welcome back to The Dog Days. This hasn't got a series name, this hasn't got a series episode. However, it is going to be called Death and Breath. Death and Breath. And we're going to be speaking today about death, what it means to die, but actually, what it means to live. And then, with the wonderful Josh Connolly, we're going to be speaking about breathing. Not the normal kind, I'm talking deep, transformative, trauma-releasing breathing. And Jack Simpson is going to sit here and go, what the fuck are you two talking about? Enjoy.
This is The Dog Days with Ollie Scott, Junior Eldstar and Ian McKenzie.
Hello! Wow! I'm getting used to this recording button. I'm becoming a little pro. Hello and welcome, Jack Simpson. How are you doing?
I'm all good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, sir. I'm very well. Josh Connolly.
Yes.
Nice to have you here,
yes,
brother.
Yes, good to be here. Nice to get out and about.
I'm sorry that you arrived here an hour and a half early. Sorry. I'm sorry that we arrived 15 minutes late.
Oh, mate, it doesn't matter. You can't apologise for me getting here early. That's not
no,
you,
I know, I was apologising for that, actually. I'm sorry that for some reason you came in 90 minutes too early. Well, look, thank you, chaps. It's a hot summer's day and we're in a dark room with purple light. And I've kept it ambient and dark today because I watched a video the other day on Instagram, which I don't normally do. It was actually Pooch that sent it to me. And it originally was tagged, what is, are you making this mistake to your body? And I was like, oh, fucking hell, here we go. 10-minute video. I don't know how he has enough time to watch a 10-minute video. And after then, he sends me all these emojis and he's like, mate, OMG, OMG, WTF. And I'm like, what the fuck? Okay, fine, I'll watch this video. I've watched it 10 times. Probably 15 times since then.
Wow.
And it's basically about mortality, right? And a death and the fact that we're all going to die. Happy fucking Thursday morning,
yeah,
guys.
Thank you for that.
But okay, this is really interesting. And I've found, ever since watching this video, if I remember these facts, it's beautiful, right? And there's a quote from Troy coming here, guys. So just brace yourself. But essentially, he's talking about, it's Aubrey Marcus, my favourite, your least. Mm. He's talking about how we go through our life, either looking in the past about stuff that we've done and letting that dictate how we're feeling in the moment and going, why did I do that? Why did I fucking smoke that joint? Why did I, you know, do that thing, get with that girl, da 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 da. And then you're either doing that or, this is for a lot of people, or the opposite of everything will be fine when I have that six pack, when I have that car, when I'm living in that house, when I've had children, I settle down and da 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 da. And we always, as the rhetoric goes, forget to live now. Then he bounces over to Troy, this quote, this amazing quote where Brad Pitt, with his luscious long hair, is looking into this wonderful female's eyes and he says, do you not realise that the gods envy us? And the reason the gods envy us is because we are mortal and they are not. And therefore, this isn't endless. This isn't an eternal thing that we have. And because we have an ending, life is then more beautiful. And I heard that and I thought, fucking hell, that is really interesting. Because I am constantly thinking, well, when I've got that, then I'll be okay. And I really... when I hear that thing, when I remind myself that, you know, you walk outside and it's raining, and oh, fucking hell, it's raining. Isn't it amazing to think, like, actually, one day I'm not going to have skin. One day I'm just going to be a dead, rotting thing that doesn't exist, that cannot feel rain on my skin, and or that cannot taste coffee, or that cannot, you know, laugh, and all these things that we do.
Yeah.
And I just felt like, fucking hell, isn't that amazing? Josh Connolly, how are you, mate?
I'm good, mate. And listen, I like the quote from Troy.
Yeah. Have you heard it before?
No. I think people with long hair tend to have good quote.
Troy had quite long hair.
No, yeah, he did, mate.
Yeah,
I think that's
did.
What I think
Josh was getting at.
Josh referring to himself, JC, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, right. I'm with you.
but the reason I like it is because it's it resonates a lot, actually. And the first thing I thought of is, like, when you're on holiday, yeah, you really make the most of, if you go away for 7 days, you really make the most of every 7 days that you're there, don't you?
Yeah.
And actually, it's funny that you bring up the rain, because when we went to Jamaica a few years ago, we went there to get married, and we was really worried about it raining on the day, because it's like tropical country. Mm. And I remember the lifeguard by the pool, and I was like saying, do you reckon it'll rain like on Tuesday at 10 o'clock when we get married? And he was like, don't worry, man, it's liquid sunshine. And it's like, and it was true, right? They weren't worried about stuff like that over there. And I remember it reminded me also of a quote from an old chiropractor of mine.
An old chiropractor of yours? Why did you fire him?
He retired, actually.
Okay.
And I don't use chiropractors anymore because I fell out of confidence in the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
There's a podcast. But I once went to see him, and when I came in, he said, how are you? And I said, oh, I'm all right, etc. I said, miserable outside though, isn't it? And he said, no, outside it's raining, you're miserable. Ooh. And it's true, right? It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just raining, but I decided that because it was raining, it was miserable.
Yeah. Mm. This is, okay, so this is what I sat in this room with Ali, my mate that had a stroke last month, actually. And actually, I sat with him on Friday with Hass down in Brighton, our mutual friend. For some reason, I don't know why this is happening to me at the moment, but I'm thinking about fate's mortality and all this kind of stuff. And it's, when I hear these things, it's reminding me, I think because I'm so fearful of, or I have been so fearful of the idea of all of this becoming like the end or whatever, and going through life having not lived it to its full, I've always been scared of letting go and living it to its full. Mm. Because for me, that's, is living it to its full just then being the fucking boozy pisshead guy? Because I think that's what goes on in my head. I'm like, well, then, if everything's, you know, live every moment like it's your last, I'm in the pub with my mates.
Yeah.
So like, and this brings me on to finding other experiences where you feel alive. Josh has just got his breathwork instruction. What is it called again? How do I do this properly?
I'm just certified breathwork coach.
You are now
coach.
A certified breathwork coach, which if you told me that a year ago, I'd be like, what the hell is that? Mm. I have now done lots of breathing. Why? Because I truly believe when I do this breathing thing, I feel super alive.
Mm.
And it's changed, like just doing that has made me go, wow, there's actually an alternative to being there with your mates, having red wine and drinking or whatever. There's this moment of being on your own, of just breathing, where you feel almost more present than you've ever felt in your life.
Mm.
Can you explain why you got into this breathing, what it's meant to you, and how anybody else can adopt it?
I suppose I got into it the sort of similar way that you have and do, right? I was doing little bits of it here and there everywhere in terms of in my like morning routine, I would do a lot of focusing on my breath. I'd had some big experiences. I don't think I knew when I had the big experiences that they were to do with concentrating on the breath. But in the past, some of the like big emotional release experiences that I'd had in my morning routine, I now look back on them and realize what I did was trying to focus like on my breath as much as I could, and then pushed myself to the kind of states that I found by doing the breath work in this way. To kind of tangle it into everything that you've been saying already, I think we live a lot in our rational brain, and actually this is like talking therapies and stuff can be really, really good. But I also think it's very easy to bypass the ways that we feel and actually talk ourselves around having to feel anything. I think when you do proper, you know, conscious connected breathing is what I do. I think when you do that, it bypasses that rational part of the brain and you just get to the feeling.
Mm.
And I think anything that we do in terms of what we do for, when you talk about going and having a good old drink up or do like anything else that you might do to really seize the day and use the moment, the main focus of all of them at the core is about being present. Sport. Mm. If you do any kind of sport, the reason you fall in love with partaking in that sport is because when you're right in the crust of it, you are fully present, right?
Yeah, yeah.
People jump out of planes to do that, right? The reason you love jumping out of a plane is because
the
adrenaline pushes you dead into that moment. And I think if you start to think about what it's like to be dead in that moment, you know, like when you've been in a car and you've had like a near miss in a car, you know that everything...
This morning.
This morning on the way here, yeah.
A few times in my life, yeah.
but everything slows down, right?
Yeah.
You can almost see it
sort of
happening, right? And that's when you push yourself present. People that love doing art love it because when they're in it, they're lost and they're in the present moment. So it all comes back to that. And I think with the busy kind of logical, rational brains that we have, the breath work for me, when you push into that moment, bypasses all of that and puts you in your body.
I think I've been struck. This is really interesting. Just hearing you talk about sports people and being in a car and all that kind of stuff. I think I've been lacking this, and why I've been doing a lot of breathing recently, because my phone, you know, I did that like not looking at my phone thing for 72 hours, I finally started feeling more present again.
Yeah,
I wasn't just eating crisps and having a beer to like numb out the feelings, so I could suddenly feel present, because that's the truth. Drinking, you drink because you get to the silenced moment where all the inhibitions are gone. And you're with your mates and you don't mind what you say because you're in the present moment, because all of the fears of whatever you had are gone. Mm. We've spoken about this before.
Yeah, escaping it.
Exactly. I feel like I used to like playing sport. I used to love playing squash. I used to love doing all that kind of stuff, and I haven't done that for ages. I used to love feeling quite scared in my career, going for a meeting with, you know, someone that I was nervous. You know, yesterday morning I had this really important breakfast. I didn't look at my phone once.
Yeah.
Whereas... And I think I've stopped scaring myself, or stopped like pushing myself into the part where I need to be present. And I think it's because we have these little dopamine boxes and life is very comfortable that I'm having to do things like breath work and stuff like that.
Mm.
Do you find, when do you feel present in your work life?
Well, I suppose you could get into the conversations about flow state, right?
When you're,
like, so this morning, sat there, I got a coffee, it was really, really nice. I knew I had a couple of things to get done that I really am passionate about and wanted to do.
Mm.
So I was in them and I was very present in them and I was enjoying doing them, right? And I think when you're in that state of presence, I don't want to sound too cheesy, but everything becomes... beautiful and like something that you could and want to watch, right?
Mm.
If you brought a toddler in here, you could sit and just watch that toddler, right? I'm talking like 2 years old, crawling about.
Mm.
You could watch them for ages.
Fascinating.
Fascinating. Yeah. Why? Because they're present. So they ooze that kind of nowness, right?
Yeah.
That kind of I am-ness. And if you look at any spiritual text, actually, you know, look at the Bible, any kind of text like that, at the core of it, what you'll always find is that they talk about this I am-ness, right? This present. The I am-ness is what we are when we're born, right? I am who I am.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, I don't change or alter anything. If I'm going to cry, I'll cry. You are who you are. And the world in that space is full of wonder, right? Mm-hmm. You're just out exploring, and you watch a two-year-old, it'll pick something up, it's amazed by it. It'll put it down, it'll move on and be amazed by the next thing.
Mm.
But then because of the world in which we live in, and I guess, you know, as our rational brain develops, we create stories, we start telling ourselves narratives, and then we push parts of ourselves into hiding, and then we start thinking that we can't be who we are in certain emotions. And then the only time we ever experience any kind of presence is when we push or force ourselves there, rather than go back to a two-year-old who is... always present.
Mm.
And that's what the spiritual texts tell you, all of them at the core.
So this breath work is something that I don't do enough of, and I'd love to get into it, to be honest with you. You're saying that when you're doing this breath work on a regular basis, it's helping you be more present and living in the moment and trying to eradicate the negatives of the past and the future kind of thing.
I think you have to understand... So yes, to answer the question is yes.
Mm.
Doing it regular, that regular practice has helped doing that. But the type of breath work that I do...
Yeah.
Will push you into that within 10 minutes of doing it.
Yeah.
So like what happens is if I was to do a session with you, I'd get you to lay down.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would get you to focus on a certain breath pattern.
Mm.
And within 15, 20 minutes, it's not for everyone, like everything, yeah. It's not for everyone, right? It won't work for everyone. But I do believe that with an open mind, that it can work for a lot of people. Within 15 minutes, maximum, in that session,
yeah.
You won't have a choice but to be, it takes your emotions, and I've done it with you, Ollie, didn't I? But it takes your emotions and it just, bam, puts them in your yeah. face.
I'll explain.
Can I delve into something quite interesting as well? I mean,
yeah.
this is quite, I mean, obviously, this breathwork thing, I feel like a lot of it originates from yoga, in a sense, would you say? Kama Sutra yoga, I know
it's a bit of chicken and the egg, like you right. could say that yoga okay. and all that originates from, yeah. From the breath, but the idea of focusing sure. on the breath and coming back to ourselves yeah. is probably originates somewhere in India way before we right. had any idea of okay. it.
So it's like curveball, but if I'm relating to, so they say that some people can breathe and go in such a emotional breathing state that it's almost like orgasmic. Am I right?
Or, yeah.
I know we're bringing the sex thing into this.
Tantric. Your girlfriend has done tantric breathing. She has. She was telling me about tantric
yeah,
breathing.
Yeah, she has. Let's not talk about
that. Oh, sorry.
We're talking about sort of death, my girlfriend, tantric breathing.
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying.
But I've actually had like moments like in a bedroom actually with her and I've been breathing really, really deeply and yeah. gone fuzzy all over. It's mental.
Okay.
Like, seriously. Not, like, going out of myself, but this... I've never experienced it before. I can't remember how long ago it happened, but I remember it. And I was like, this is the breathing thing.
There is science. So,
It was crazy, though. My whole body was fuzzy and I felt just, like, completely, like, this uproar of just... It was...
Endorphins, euphoria,
yeah,
kind of vibe.
It was crazy, crazy, and I couldn't stop talking about it to her after. I was like, "That was mental. When can we do that again?" Anyway, going back to more of the serious side, please.
Well, I just want to, because this will make more sense of what you're talking about.
Sure.
So, process is, and not, I don't want to ruin the fun because you should definitely do this with Josh, and it's. The experience of doing it with Josh is really important because you do need a bit of a shaman or a guide when you're doing it. Because your body is trying to stop you from doing it because it's going out of control. So essentially, you lie on your back and he's playing like the Gladiator theme tune or whatever's in your ears and you're like, okay, right, here we go, right? And Josh's like, okay, your body's going to go. So you start to do this dual breath, which is like that, right? Yeah. So two breaths. I'm probably doing it wrong. But into your stomach, then into your chest, then into your stomach or the other way around.
Into your stomach, yeah. Belly, chest, out, yeah.
Right? So you're doing that. To like Josh's beat and to his music, and then about 10 minutes of doing that. By the way, a minute in, you're in. Like you're just
really,
you'll be lightheaded enough that you'll just be in a bit of a flow. You'll be kind of, your body will be trying to stop you from doing it every now and then, and you're like, am I doing it right? And Josh is reassuring you, you are doing it right, don't worry. So you keep on going, and then after about 10 or 12 minutes, Josh goes, okay, I'm going to ask you to scream. Right, this is where it gets a little bit okay. like, whoa.
Wow.
I'm going to ask you to scream. And I've never done that before in my life. I had a pillow like the one on my left here.
Yeah.
And I just went, all right. And it's quite weird at the beginning because you're like, why am I screaming into a pillow? But you're like, ah. And you try and release. And Josh's like, come on, let it all out, let it all out. And you kind of half do. Anyway, another 5 or so minutes of that. And you do the same thing again. This time, because you're a bit more fucked, you are slowly becoming more and more. Less and less I can't describe it. You're basically, you're connected, but you're not, and you are
off your nut.
Yeah,
really? Are you
nut.
Serious?
That's what I say. Yeah, you're off your nut.
Off your nut, and you got him, and all you can hear is really him, and this music. You can't really even hear the music. You're just going, I can't even think of anything, and then you scream again, and this time you are just letting everything out because you're like,
yeah,
and then you do the final scream. And when the final scream happens, when you really are fucking paralyzed and off your nut, apparently my arms are flying everywhere.
Really?
Like, I'm doing this and my legs are twitching, my hands are going all tetany and weird.
Where do I sign up?
I started screaming and I started crying just into my pillow, like, like that. And
it makes me fucking light up,
really?
Mate, when you're talking about it because I know it. Because I know it.
And Josh does this nearly every day. He's had people, I'm not going to disclose their identities, but he's had, you know, very senior lawyers randomly do it and like,
gosh,
just start going, fuck you, like screaming.
That was me that was going, fuck you when I was doing it. Yeah. I'm guessing the pillows needed just in case the neighbours or whoever's in the room next door are concerned. Just the shouting. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you can do it into a pillow or into your arm. I normally do it. I often do it into my hand when I'm delivering it. So I go like that.
Yeah, he's doing it with you. He's doing that.
Wow.
Like that.
Okay, I need to try this. It's a healthy high.
I'm fucking hugely healthy. It's a healthy high. This is why Josh has got addicted to it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny. He did one breathing thing and he was like, right, I'm fucking becoming a breathwork instructor.
That's crazy.
And it is mental. And like, so we probably should have done this before speaking about how it benefits you. But for a long time afterwards, you will have like this buzz over your whole body and this kind of, it's a traumatic release. And Josh, I'll let you explain it, but when we panic or when we're shocked, apparently we go like that, and that's their storing trauma.
Right.
So this breath is almost releasing
it,
that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a theory. I don't know how much science is behind that, but like your normal breath, you should be breathing through your nose, right? Yeah. So you should be in your parasympathetic nervous system. So. Mm-hmm. We should normally breathe through our nose, and it's very calming when you do that. If you fill your body with air through your nose and then out through your mouth, and you do that regularly, whenever you're stressed during the day, if you can come back to breathing in through your nose and then out through your mouth, then it's great. But when we're panicked, when we're in that kind of stressed state, we go into the sympathetic nervous system, the fight or flight system, and then that's when you start breathing through your mouth, and it's shallow breathing. So all the breath that I do when I'm getting people to lay down and do this stuff is all through the mouth, which is counterintuitive for a lot of people that have done kind of yogis. All the yogis out there will sort of struggle with that, and they'll have to like reevaluate the way that they do it, but the idea is, sort of my beliefs is, that it's trapped in that system, and then so when you start doing that breath, like I say, I've done a lot of one-on-one stuff with people in the last couple of months. And I haven't done it with one person that hasn't had a massive experience.
Wow.
And, you know, Ollie mentions lawyers, but I've done it with, did it with Pooch.
Well, mate, he said footballers. He was going mental.
Yeah, he was, so were you. You were going mental, right? I've done it with different friends. So what we're saying is I've done it with people from all different walks of life, right? Who, a lot of them who will show up thinking, this isn't really going to do anything for me. And I have to say at the beginning, you really, really need to expect to have something massive happen, because that's normally what happens.
Right.
I mean, like you, Ollie, was, there's a couple of times like where you sat up and you went to grab something. And I was like, you're fine, lay back down. So then you lay back down. Your legs were flailing everywhere.
Really?
Most people will vibrate in their hips.
Yeah. So, was this face to face or on the Zoom?
On Zoom. I was on my sofa.
That's fascinating that you can even do it through like digital screen. It's pretty powerful.
I've started online sessions. So the first one that I did, like I had about 70 people sign up. So there was sort of nearly 40, I think it was about 38 that came on live, because obviously I say to people, don't come on live unless you can have the time. So then the video goes, I leave the video recording for people to access so they can do it in a space and time when it's right, because you need to not be disturbed and stuff like that. And just the experiences that people are having with it is incredible. One of the things I say, with a lot of the stuff that you see that I do online, if you follow it, I don't often bang on about stuff as in you should do this, because I think in the space that I sort of operate in, a lot of people do that and make you feel like if you're not doing that, then you're doing it wrong. And my experience has been over the years, I pick things up and I do different things all of the time, right? And so I think you should do whatever the heck you want to do in order to make yourself feel comfortable and happy in your life. And there's too much of people out there saying you should be doing this, and if you're not doing it, you're not doing it properly type stuff. But I can't shut up about this breath work at the moment, just because of the impact that I believe that it can have and stuff like that.
It is, in breath work in general is taking off. If you look at every person that's spending time in the mental health space, I see it in my head as HIIT. Like for yoga, if you're not into yoga and it's too long and boring, and because I've gone to those yoga classes and some breathwork classes I've been to, and it's fucking boring. Meditation classes, you're sitting there being like, when's it going to happen then? When's this transcendence going to happen?
Yeah.
This is like a HIIT version of that, high-intensity interval training version of yoga.
Yeah, it's a good way of describing it. Yeah. And, you know, people turn up to the sessions and I'm like, look, what do you know? And they tell me a little bit and I'm like, this is not, you're not going to be sat there calm.
No.
Like, you know, into your feeling, into your body and feel the breath go into your...
all toes.
That, all that. Or you always go there with the toes, don't you? Right.
No, I've not looked at your toes today.
What's wrong with
they're
toes?
In sliders, look.
Yeah, fuck it up.
What's wrong with them? Are they football toes?
No, I've chopped them off, didn't I?
Chopped off his toe. He hasn't heard the story.
You'll hear it. I'll tell you after. Now, look, that breath work that I'm that does work for some people, like calming breath work, but that's not what this is. Yeah, and like you said, my teacher, a guy called John Paul Crimi, who I learned from, what I really liked about him is he just cut away everything that he felt like he didn't really need to be there.
Yeah.
And then so I've taken that on really in what I do. Let's get rid of all of the stuff that I feel like is there to try and create a movement and just go boom, let's just do what's gonna get the emotional release.
Yeah.
And then you can do it. Like say you only breathe for, I think had you breathing for about 26 minutes. Yeah. I probably pushed you that. That's 2 or 3 minutes longer than I would do a normal.
Yeah, beginner. It was quite a while. It was.
I can imagine. Obviously, a practice like this is quite addictive. It's a natural high which you're not going to feel shit after. But would you say that doing it too much is too much? Like, if you were to do it too much, is it bad for you? Not bad for you, but are you too relaxed?
Well,
because you need some sense of urgency in life, right? For everyday situations.
Yeah, well, what I would say is if you do this breath work in the morning, you'll have more urgency in the day than you would if you didn't do it. So there's that. The thing about addictiveness, everything's addictive, right? So everything's addictive or nothing's addictive, depending on how you want to look at it. Addiction's about wanting to escape who I am, right? If I'm not turning up to... I said it's about everything, right? If I'm not... It's the same as going to the gym. Right, it's not unhealthy to go to the gym every day. You probably listen to your body and every now and then you need a little bit of time off. But if you're going to the gym instead of turning up for your partner or your kids or important stuff within your life, then it might be going a little bit too far. And it's the same with breath work. I don't think you can do it too much. And actually doing it, the regular practice has really helped to kind of regulate my body. And listen, it's just air. It's just you're just breathing.
Yeah,
it's not, you know, it's not even, you're not putting anything in your body, it's just breath.
One thing I was going to ask you, not ask you, you gave some very good advice recently. Someone very close to me was suffering from having panic attacks after giving up drinking. And it was really interesting because I see a lot of people thinking about either going sober or cutting something completely out of their life. I just wanted to talk about that a little bit because I think it's fucking amazing and remarkable when somebody decides that they don't want to do something that is causing them harm. And we all rally around them and go, that's amazing, well done. Sadly, what then happens is all that immediate support goes away a little bit and then you're left without the thing that you used to rely on to decompress or to escape and whatever it is that you were doing that thing for. What advice do you give to those kind of people? Like, let's say someone goes sober for 3 months and then they start having not cravings for it again, because I think you can kind of move on from that, but adverse effects to their body and they're struggling mentally.
Yeah.
What do you say to those people?
It is like you say, you go beyond the cravings, right? But then you're just left with, you know, what was there before you had the way to escape the ways that you feel, right? And this is why I never, ever talk down about alcohol itself, right? Because it's a good way to decompress like anything else. But when you remove it completely, because the relationship, we talked about that in the past, your relationship becomes so toxic with it that you can't deal with it. You get to that period. You have like the honeymoon period in the kind of recovery community. They often call it the pink cloud, where everyone thinks it's amazing that you're sober. You think it's amazing and you're floating on that. And then like you say, that dies down from everyone and you're just left with your stuff. And listen, that's where most people fail.
Yeah.
And what's important to say is that most people don't make it in terms of staying sober. Most people, literally most people don't make it. Yeah, most, yeah.
Why is that? Because
it's fucking hard. It's really, really, really hard, particularly in the first 2 years.
What's hard?
Dealing with who you are without any kind of escape. And dealing with the stresses of life and all of that kind of stuff. And there's no direct answer here. That's the thing. You know, I know the person that you're talking about and have spoke to them, you know, a little bit about what do you do. And the hardest thing is that you have to say to them, you got to write it out and find out, you got to find what works for you.
Yeah.
Because I know I said to them, try the breath work, right? But that might not be for them in that space.
Yeah.
Because I'm 9 years in and have found breath work. So what did I use when I was like a year, 2 years? Probably then for me, the biggest thing was people around me going through the same experience. I needed some kind of mentorship at that stage. I think somebody who I could speak to, connect in with regularly to just offload how I'm feeling, what's showing up for me. Because when you have no escape from the ways that you feel, no escape. People don't, I don't think people realize when you do drink, you don't realize just how much you get for the release that you do get from it. You might just see it as a bit of a piss up on a Friday, but actually it's, you're releasing so much from the week. And if you don't have that, then you're pushing it down and you're compounding it into your body, right? And that, and you've seen it in what's happening in society, right? With what's just happened with the Euros and everything at the moment spills over into being a bit of a riot.
Yeah, it is.
That's because people have been locked up for so long and emotionally we suppress and we push everything down. And then so when they get the opportunity to release it, it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
And then it's interesting, they were saying that Russell Brand did a video about like how... this is the only ever time in history, or like when there is a nation that all want one thing to happen, it's the only ever time where government overthrow can happen, because you, all of our micro cultures and identities keep us arguing between each other.
Yeah.
When everyone agrees on one thing, that's when it gets quite scary.
Dangerous. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And, it,
yeah.
And you can see it, you know, with all the shit that's happening at the moment. But what's happening now is everyone's arguing about each other with this racism thing. But okay, that I understand. I guess when I ask you these things, sometimes I'm expecting the silver bullet answer of like, this is what they should do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, right? Listen, there isn't one.
No.
And because everyone's different. It's not possible that, you know.
Exactly. No. Exactly. And what we all need and what we don't have, and it's, you know, we all need people in our lives to help us comprehend the ways that we're feeling, to be with us in those feelings and to help us comprehend them. And when you don't have that, right, then you're in it on your own. And that's the biggest struggle. But to be present with ourselves in our bodies, to bring it back to everything that we've talked about so far, to be present with ourselves and in our bodies, we have to be present with every part of who we are. And that ain't easy, because every one of us has that shadow, right? That part of yourself that you don't want to look at, that part of yourself that sometimes gets a bit loud, having a good drink up gets away from it, or doing, you know what, I play football on the weekends, that's one of the ways I get to escape from it. The breath work's helping, that's one of the ways. But the real courageous work is when we're looking at it and we're trying to deal with it, right? And that ain't easy. It's not easy to look yourself fully in the eye and be accepting and be yourself and be in your body with everything of who you are. Because we live in a world where you're not allowed that part of yourself. So we've tried to create this shameless society, right? That's why cancel culture happens, right? Because everybody's so terrified of shame. Everybody's so terrified of feeling any kind of shame that we're trying to eradicate it. And what that does is it pushes everybody into hiding and makes us feel more shamed, because you get rid of shame by shining light on it and saying Me Too. That's why the Me Too movement was so massive, because it was based on people going, let me take a part of myself that I've hidden from everybody, and now I get to say me too. Mm. But what? But we don't do that for the shadow parts of ourselves, which is the parts of ourselves that are slightly more darker, that do think and do things that we wouldn't want to be able to share with it. But everyone's got them, but no one's talking about it. But when you look at this, what's going on at the societal level now, that's been so like polarized, yeah? Because then when you chucked COVID on top of it now as well, then you had this whole way you have to act when you're publicly in front of people in terms with COVID, but then there's the undercurrent of nobody's really properly following the rules, but we know we're supposed to, so on a public level we all talk like we are, and then we're all just hiding so much of ourselves.
Yeah. Mm. Being naughty behind the scenes.
And then like the whole thing becomes dysfunctional because nobody wants to show any difficult part of themselves because we're all presenting as just so perfect all of the time, because if you do anything other than that, then you get cancelled. Mm. And what happens is that kind of cancel culture, that inability to be with you in your shadow, is about people's inability to be in and with themselves with their own wounds. So they'll chuck it on your lap and say, you have to deal with it. Don't say, you're not allowed to say anything that makes me feel uncomfortable or that I find difficult because I don't want to deal with it. So you keep it all to yourself. Mm. And then so we live in this world where, you know, it's just so hard to be who you are in the ways that you feel. The breath work, that's why I feel the breath work is so good, because it takes all of that away and you just release that emotion.
Mm. Without having to say to someone, I'm a dick, or like, this is a really part of me that I'm really worried about or scared about.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
It's the way of releasing that. Because it's funny, you go to any nightclub smoking area, if they're back open from next Monday, yeah. You go to any, that's where the person who's up peeled up or on gear or they're fucked and they're chatting to Katie and she's like, and this is how I'm feeling, I've not told anybody. you see that happening because that's where they feel comfortable on showing their, you know, their hidden selves.
Yeah, yeah, because they've had that space created.
Yeah.
And so when you do the one-on-one breath work with somebody, it's very taxing as well. Even though I'm only sat there just getting you to breathe and I'm watching you, you're releasing that emotion and I'm in that space with you. And you know, I have to, like, in a compassionate way, hold that for you, let you bring that out without thinking, oh, this is getting a bit too much for me now. I can't deal with this emotion. Maybe I'm going to switch it up. Letting people bring out all of their emotion completely free from judgment.
It's a hard thing to do that.
Yeah. It's very, very hard to do.
Because I'm struggling with something at the moment. A mate of mine needs, I think, emotional support, quite a lot of it. And I don't feel like I have the time or emotional capacity to give it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if it's being asked of me anyway. But I struggle with this, but the holding space, particularly when you're so invested in somebody or when you've known someone so closely and you know, you can see where they're going wrong. So where I struggle to hold space is when you're going like, oh, fucking hell, like, you've done this a million times. What? How are you doing this again?
Mm-hmm.
I cannot sit in this with you anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's weird because I know the right answer is no, you've got to ignore that and you've got to sit there with them. But it's,
I mean, look, when we talk about holding space, one of the key components to make sure that you don't forget in that is boundaries.
Mm.
So when I'm holding space to somebody, I hold space for them in a way that helps me to be emotionally available. Here's the, you know, I don't like to use the terminology that a lot of people come up with, but container is one that a lot of people are using at the moment, yeah? Here's the container that I can be with you in. Here's the boundaries, right? I'm willing to be with you in this space and to hold space for you in a way that I know that you need, right? However, there is boundaries to this.
Mm.
And I only have the emotional capacity and availability to be able to do it in this way. Because don't forget that being emotionally available for somebody sometimes is letting them know that when you cross these boundaries, then I can't be there in that space either.
Mm.
So not being there is probably the wrong term, but compassionately withdrawing and saying I've done everything that I can in and of itself sometimes can be the support that somebody needs, because consequences and boundaries must exist, right?
Mm. That's consequences and boundaries must exist. Can you just play out a consequence or a boundary?
Well, look, a consequence is here, I'm emotionally available for you, right? And I'll hold space and be there for you as much as I can. But, and here's what that looks like.
Mm.
So in my life, I have, here's my boundaries. I have a wife, I have children. Here's the things that are important for me in that life. And here's how I show up to that part of myself. That's all very important to me. So here's the space that I can create for you, right?
Mm.
And I'll create that space as regularly and as much as you want. And I'll do that free from judgment. And that doesn't matter, right? But if you start moving outside of the constraints of that space, then I can't. Then I'm not gonna be there for you, and I'm not gonna be there with you, right? That's about boundaries, and actually, it's no boundaries. No boundaries can become highly kind of, the only word I can think of is abusive, but it's the wrong thing. But it's abusive to children, for example. If you're a parent and you have no boundaries with your children, then that in itself becomes abuse. Right?
How do you have a boundary with your child? What's the boundary with your children? How do you set one?
Yeah. Well, you have you let people know what the clear constraints are. So you can have compassionate conversations about consequence. I know why you just, I don't know, threw the chair across the room, right? It makes sense to me based on what you're experiencing that you would have an outburst of emotion like that. However, in the way in which we live and within this household, we can't have that sort of behavior. So I'm going to be stopping that. And each and every time that you do that, there will be a consequence. Now, you can make what the consequences are. With a child, I always think the consequence shouldn't be based around removing them from their attachment to you, right? So I don't like time out and stuff like that. But when it comes to, like, with other adults, like you're saying with your friend, a boundary might be, I've given you everything that I can, and that will always be available to you. However, right now, you're moving outside the constraints of that boundary that I've given you. You're trying to take more. It's taxing on me now because I feel like what I'm giving is not even being received.
Yeah.
That remains there. Everything that I'm willing to give remains there. Come and get it when you're able to work within the boundaries of which I exist in.
Because it's going into your personal time, you know, when you could be doing your things for yourself.
Well, also holding more emotional space for other people as well.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. And what people will do is they'll lean on you as much as you let them lean on you, right? When you have clear boundaries and you're like, this is how much you can lean on me and this is how emotionally available I can be, or physically available or whatever it may be, here's what I can be, then when you're very clear with that, people start to understand those boundaries and then they'll work within them constraints. Mm. If we don't communicate our boundaries, then we can be getting upset with people for doing what we're actually allowing them to do.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things I struggle with the most is having the courage and bravery or whatever. I see it as courageous and brave to tell someone when they're crossing a boundary. I don't like how uncomfortable it makes me feel when I say to them, you're going too far.
You don't tend to do that much.
I don't,
I haven't really seen it. It's funny.
I do sometimes. I mean, I have 7 people that work for me now and they all report into me.
Mm.
So I have to set boundaries with those guys.
That's work is slightly different. To
work, in a work environment, it's much easier.
It's okay, isn't it?
Because you're paying the
salary. Professional,
Yeah. Whereas with a friend, it's like I almost feel like they're going to be like, "Who the fuck do you think you are? Setting me a boundary."
So where does the but that's the shadow that you need to look at and that you need to work on.
Which,
so if you bring it back to the IFS stuff that we talked about ages ago, there's a part of you that feels like it's your duty or that feels like you need to save everyone.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you said it there, if I was to lay a boundary, I feel like my friends would be like, who the fuck are you to lay a boundary with me?
Mm.
So what story is it in your mind that tells you that your friends are there because you don't have any boundaries?
Mm.
And what story is it in your mind that tells you that if you were to lay a boundary, your friends would think bad of you? So you have to ask that question, why does that part of me exist? Why do I feel a deep sense of duty and like I stop becoming Ollie Scott if I'm not if I start placing in boundaries, where does that come from? What does it think would happen to you if you don't exist? If though, you know, if you start, if it didn't exist, so if you started laying boundaries, what's the fear there? And from the things that you've said already, you already think that your friends would think less of you. They wouldn't like you as much. So there's a belief somewhere in you from what you're saying. And I wouldn't normally pick somebody apart like this, but...
But you know me quite well.
I know you quite well.
Yeah.
There's a part of you in there that believes that your value and your likability is based on simply how much you can be there for other people.
Yeah, and almost boundaryless. Mm. My part of me is that I'm accessible to anybody at any point.
Like, yeah, exactly.
That's almost like, that's what I'm trying to express to the world. But that's actually, I have found now that that is not what I want. And so this part of me is quietening, I'm finding. This part that was insecure about friends being like, I thought you were the person that was there for everybody. Mm. I'm fearing that less now, I think, because I have a girlfriend, because I have the people that report into me that need me in a business sense, and friends that are in a reciprocal relationship with me where they can hold space or they ask me questions as to how I'm doing and that kind of stuff. Mm. I'm starting to see that actually, I think when I was... The part of me when I was at college, perhaps, or whatever, wanted to be friends with everyone, get away from my school that I went to and make new friends and whatever. And therefore, it was like a decade of building as many friendships with as many people as humanly possible. Mm. And that was my strength. That was my thing. My network was, you know, what made me who I was. And I feel like now that it's closing, I think maybe this is what happens when you get to 30.
Yeah. I think there is a part of...
Life moves on.
There is a part of that that as you grow older, you know, most people that... sort of move into their 30s and all that stuff, your circle does shrink, right? Mm. But I think you do start to develop and gain a sense of self.
Mm.
And as you gain that sense of self, that core sense of self becomes stronger, you start to realize that you don't need those people around you.
Mm. Yeah.
And actually, if they're not happy with the boundaries in which I set within my life, then they don't have to be in my life.
Yeah.
And then what you find is, or what I found is, I don't have loads of friends at all. I have a very small circle. Yeah. And I do that because I lay clear boundaries.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, no, I don't do that. And then some people, you'll notice, some people are like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
And then some people will want to judge you for it. What do you mean you don't do that? Why don't you do that? That's a bit weird, isn't it? And you think, well, no, it's not. You don't have to be in my life if you don't like the boundary.
It's true though, isn't it? Like when you're younger, you're like, mate, I've got loads of mates actually. Yeah. Like I know this guy, I'm going to see this guy. And my dad was always like, when I was younger, I can count all my best mates on one hand. Bertie, Willis, Toby, Fatty Jones, whatever all their weird nicknames are. But it's true, your group becomes like tight-knit. You become wiser, older, sort of, you understand what you want and what you don't want in your life, you know?
Yeah.
There was something I wanted to touch and go back to quickly, and that was that. I like the analogy of the pink cloud
phase
for people obviously going through struggles, trying to get out of something and move forward. I think essentially, in a way, this pink cloud moment can be eternal for some people if they have a strong family unit, a good relationship with their partner, and friends who are consistently there for each, you know, for them. Also, you know, alcoholics, drug addicts, you have Narcotics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous. So there are areas of this that can help play into that. But
yeah,
do you know what I'm saying? It's not always gone forever, that sort of honeymoon period, you might want to call it, or pink cloud moment.
No, and listen.
Can stay consistent.
Yeah, I don't know how consistent it... I don't think it can always be fully consistent. I don't think it can be fully consistent in life.
Mm.
Right? I think life is a series of ups and downs, right? And I guess what defines our whole lives is about how we deal with those ups and downs within our lives, right? And sobriety is no different. And there's lots of like sober communities now that are online that are really, really good. There's loads of stuff if you go onto like Instagram and all that sort of stuff. All these things exist. But I think ultimately when you remove everything and you come back to who you are, it's scary. And what you'll be presented with as you start to... And when you go sober and you remove anything mind-altering and like that, like you either start looking at it and it starts getting a lot, or you'll jump into another addiction.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So And when you start looking at yourself, there ain't nobody that could look at themselves, I don't think, without having done a certain amount of work anyway,
yeah,
that can look at themselves and go, no, I'm pretty decent all the way through.
That's come away from an addiction. Well, not addiction, but like, but that's come away from...
Not even just addiction. I think people in general, everyone.
Yeah.
I think everyone in... I think we live in an emotionally inept society and most of us grow up in dysfunction. I would say dysfunction is the norm.
Yeah.
I do believe that that we live in a dysfunctional society as well.
That's crazy.
The pink cloud phase isn't to say that you can't be happy by being sober. The pink cloud phase is almost a distorted view of what the rest of your life is going to be like after becoming recently sober.
Yeah. Mm.
So it's a 3 month or 6 month or however long period of time where you're like, oh my God, this is easy. Everyone's affirming me and life is great. Oh, I didn't even need alcohol.
Yeah.
And then when you're out of that pink cloud phase, what Josh is describing is awareness of yourself, inability to decompress like you used to, and suddenly you're met with everything. So the pink cloud is the utopia, the fake utopia that you think the rest of your life is going to be.
Like you get in like the honeymoon period in a relationship, right?
Of course, so the sex, the sex 10 times a day.
Oh, God.
Or the things that at the beginning of the relationship where you just think it's so cute. Mm. And then after like a year, you're like, oh, my God, I don't fucking know why you do that.
Might hate the things at the start, and then you're like, oh, you develop the cute things develop. I'd say that's what happens with me. Oh, anyway.
It's a positive way to look at it.
Yeah, positives, negatives, backwards, forwards.
but in any commitment that you make to life, right, to stay committed to it forever, it has its ups and downs.
Yeah,
it's like a relationship in it. And that's one of the, I've just sort of bigged up the sober communities online, and I do think they are great. But like with anything, one of the negatives that they cause is that they just, because everyone online is trying to portray how good sobriety is because they love it and they want everyone to jump on board, they make it look like it's
easy,
just brilliant all the time.
There is nobody more self-righteous than the newly converted.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I've been a non-smoker, I've been a smoker, I've actually done that little journey quite a few times, and every single time I give up smoking, I tell everyone how shit smoking is and how great I feel.
Yeah.
Same thing when people become sober, same thing when you
just learn breath work.
Just learn breath
work. Anyone who doesn't do it's got shit life.
Yeah.
But it's true. And then you come out of that phase and you go, shit, like anything, you're going to meet struggle after having a lovely run of ease, you know. Life would be really, really boring if it was just really easy the whole time.
Yeah, well, no, exactly, yeah.
You imagine. Yeah. No books would be written if you know, and we like books, right? I've really enjoyed this. Look, I wanted to have a conversation about mortality. We've had that conversation and how it feels like it's freeing. The learning I think I've got is to be okay with getting to feel more present in whatever opportunity I can do.
And just quickly, I'll say this. I tell you who talks really good about mortality. This might surprise you. Ricky Gervais. I don't know if you've ever seen
him.
Yeah.
Because he talks a lot about, he's sort of like anti-religion, isn't he, if you want to call it that.
Yeah. What was his program? Something to do with death, wasn't it?
Afterlife.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah. I haven't there actually watched Afterlife, but that is based around it all, right?
Exactly.
And I do think that... we are obsessed with not dying, and actually the more that you can start to realize that we will die eventually, then that it's that very nature. And if it is, because Ricky Gervais says, I don't have any religion, I don't believe in any religion. And they're like, well, what do you think happens when you die then? And he's like, I'm just gone, that's it, it's over.
Yeah.
And he's like, but when you realize that, then you start to say, well, actually, I've not really got that long here. So let me try my best to try and live each and every moment, knowing that eventually I'm just going to be dead and gone. And there's a lot to be said for that. And trying to find ways to come away from the rat race or the matrix of it all, right? And to, you know, you had that weekend away where you got rid of your phone and stuff. When you can really try and do that as often as you can, and why can't you try and do stuff like that daily? Do you know what I mean? I'm not just talking about turning your phone off, but come away from everything, whether it's come away and just be with your partner or whatever it is. No phones, get rid of the phones and just be with each other and try and find that presence on a daily basis.
Do you know what I'm actually from today,
Yeah, go on.
I am going to do this. Phone in, phone on charge downstairs from 7 p.m. I live with Jack now. So yeah. I'm going to do this.
It's all very exciting.
The Epirus Muse.
From 7 p.m, what's your thing with the phone? Because you're quite good with this.
Well, I'm quite lucky in that my wife wouldn't have me on my phone when we're down and I'm with the kids anyway. So it's got to be away. So I think if she wasn't there, I would have to put it away completely. So, okay. But I don't do any looking at a device half an hour before bed.
Yeah.
Okay.
No device at all. I tell you what, very quickly, the next iOS update.
Yeah.
Because most people are on Apple, aren't they? Yeah, you know, you're judging them. If the text message comes through.
You heard it here first, everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
You're allowed to create profiles on your phone. So you can have a work profile and then you can have a home profile. And then you can have certain apps on them. So you could switch to home and it would get rid of all your email apps, my social media apps and all that. So when I'm at home, it would just turn into a phone. Obviously, you could just switch to the other profile.
Well, it's the same as, that'll be an evolution of downtime.
Yeah.
Because downtime just froze all your apps. It was fucking annoying. You'd be like, why has everything gone off? And then you just type the PIN code in to open them.
Yeah.
It was annoying, actually, and everyone ends up taking it off. This sounds very interesting.
But I would say, you know, don't have your phone on you when you're at home.
Yeah.
When you get home, put it on the side. Yeah. You don't need it.
You don't.
You don't need it. I have mine on when I'm at home. Mine's on Do Not Disturb.
Yeah. I'm going to do that more because actually I feel like I do want to have quality time with my girlfriend and my new housemates. And I actually fully engaged in a movie. I was watching Eat, Pray, Love. Mm. Fucking irony. I was watching Eat, Pray, Love 2 days ago with Jack's girlfriend and who lived in Bali. It was actually exactly how I imagined spending an evening. Yeah, you were just at work, mate. I was with your missus watching a love film.
well, I was slaving away serving wine to wankers in a posh Japanese restaurant.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
And I was on my phone and I had to keep on asking, I had to pause it, what's going on? What kind of life is that?
Yeah, concentrate on one thing. I do it
barely
all the time.
Giving any attention, you know, to that person, and then half watching a film.
Yeah.
I'm split in two, so I'm going to do this phone thing. I'm going to actually. I'm looking at your toe again.
What's the toe? Show me the toe.
Josh cut his toes off when he in a machine.
Oh right. Okay. Well, they don't look that bad.
Yeah, they do. They look worse up next to the other one, and when they're in the slider, because they only just pop out the top.
I probably would never have noticed.
Oh, it's brilliant.
It goes with the tattooed, like, good-looking bun.
Yeah. Well, I did it in a motorbike accident.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say quickly, because I was thinking about, you know, how, what happens when you die, everything else, and Ricky Gervais just saying, you know, you just die and that's it. Mm. I was always loved this, and it was Frankie Boyle, like the aggressive Scottish guy?
Yeah.
He has this analogy where it's like, you know, I've got this theory, you know, when the world ends, you go upstairs into this dark room and a big deep voice just goes to you, welcome to level 2, and then just everything begins, and it's just like that's how I'd like it to be, like a game.
Yeah I like that.
Maybe you might be rich, you might be poorer, there'll be different challenges.
Level 2,
but we're doing it again. I don't want to die.
If that is the case, I hope I haven't been on level 1.
Oh mate, yeah, I want to welcome to level 342. Well, look, that was the knock at the door. That was Rihanna. Josh, thank you again. Jack, thank you again.
Fun. Legend.
Thank
you. Lovely.
See you soon.
Thanks for listening, guys. Don't forget to follow us on our socials at Dog Days Pod. Leave us a comment, let us know what you think, and we'll see you next week.